I am joined by David Bellavia, who on June 25th will become the first living Iraq War veteran to receive the Medal of Honor. You've had to sit on this for months. You explained you got the phone call from President Trump directly last fall. How hard was it to have to keep something like that to yourself all those months?
It was actually kind of easy because the more people that you told, the more chances of it not being a secret. The other thing is that if you didn't talk about it, it's like it didn't happen. So it was psychologically, it was a tool I was using to be like, well, maybe if I don't ever mention it, they'll forget about it and it won't happen. I mean, I really did not have any desire. I never in a million years thought the attention would be like this. But I knew that, you know, it was going to be something. And I did not want that at all. So I was just hoping that maybe, you know, they found out I had a show on the radio or something and they didn't want to give it to me or whatever the case may be is. But it was so just an out-of-body experience. It really is.
You're going to be joining names like Charles de Glopper, Audie Murphy, Matt Urban, William J. Donovan, folks who are Medal of Honor recipients. Has it hit you yet?
No, but I think of, you know, the Travis Atkins and the Jason Dunhams and the Paul Ray Smiths and the guys that from our generation, Chapman, these are our Audie Murphys, you know, they're legends. They gave their life. They did all these incredible things. That any of that company is just mind-boggling. But the other thing too is that it's not. I don't really think a person receives an award. I think it's the award is what people respect, and the person is just the custodian of it. You know, and reminding kids that you know there's still something out there to fight for, and our country is worthy of this. And you know, it's so awkward. It's so incredibly, you know, the Army's all about the community and the team. And then you get singled out. And it's like, well, what are you supposed to do? We don't do this. We celebrate our achievements. So yeah. Luckily, my guys will celebrate this with me and that my guys are coming to Washington and going through all this with me. Because without that, you know, I'd be more awkward.
At your formal Army News conference, you made it about the guys. You kept deflecting. You referred to the others, the kids that you referred to as if your own family. You had to do some uncommon stuff and some rather nasty business to keep all of them alive. You go into the house. You have to. It's literally kill or be killed to save your platoon. What's the mechanism that just has you go forward? Is your first and foremost thought get my guys back home?
Yeah, but I'm not gonna lie. You get emotional when you have, you know, the enemy is doing the things that they're doing. You want to get them. You want to make sure that none of these guys hurt your guys down the road. But you know, the thing is that if that was my first day in country, I'd be a basket case. But that was, you know, almost 9 months into a year-long deployment, and at that point, that was just a bad Tuesday. You know, that was just we'd done this before and we reacted to it. And there were days where I was the one that looked over at my peer and said, I made a horrible choice, get me out of here. I walked into a minefield of Italian toe poppers and I looked over at my buddy and I'm like, I'm in a minefield, man. What do I do? And he probed to me, he rolled me over, he did everything, and we backtracked out of it. And at the end of it, I was like, had you not been there, I would have killed my entire squad. And we walked right into it. You know, that's the sort of thing that you go through when you need other people. So those guys are family.
You put your thoughts, your memoirs of your war experience in a book, Door to Door. When you had to recollect all those thoughts to put them down on paper, yeah, tell me that experience.
It's house to house, but it happens.
No, that's fine.
The idea when you do a book is that there are so many people that are telling a narrative anyway, but the narrative tends to be in a filter of heroic, this is so great, you just jetpack landed, laser cannon, and you know the alien spider people died. well, that's not war, and there is a human cost, and there is sacrifice, and we are scared, and there's nothing wrong with being scared. It's, do you embrace it, and do you use it, or do you allow yourself to be victimized by it? Do you what are you fighting for? What do the men mean? What does your country mean? What does your institutions mean? But in, you almost do it as a cathartic exercise to get it out and to just say, okay, it's over there. Go read the book. And now it's like you have to live this for the rest of your day. Had I known this was the future, you know, I probably would have revisited all those choices, to be honest with you.
You made an interesting comment during your news conference where you looked back at the Vietnam veterans who were not given a hero's welcome upon their return. Iraq veterans were given the hero's welcome. You hear the phrase, thank you for your service. And yet you suggested that Iraq war veterans seem to have a bit of a chip on their shoulder. Is it because of, you know, the political controversy behind it? Are they really feeling the same chip that maybe some Vietnam veterans are feeling?
I wouldn't compare anything to Vietnam. I think the Vietnam veterans are completely, and by the way, it's the Vietnam veterans who have protected us from, you know, that treatment. They actually protected us from being treated like they were treated. I think the chip on our shoulder comes when it's when we start comparing simultaneous conflicts to each other. Afghanistan's a good war. This is a bad war. This is a war of necessity. This is a war of choice. Your valor and your sacrifice is now looked at in that context through that prism, and that is it's unnecessary. You could make commentary about why we fight without commenting on the valor of the guys who are doing it.
And then the final question is, looking at your bio notes, I found it interesting how you got into the Army. You found yourself, you were a budding theater student, got in a little bit of trouble with Mr. Sondheim. You produced a musical review and needed the money to pay off what you owed. But when I read that, it was like, you know what? It's all the more reason to admire this guy, because he's not just a soldier. He's also a person with a heart for the arts. It's more of a well-rounded person that that David. How would you define, ideally, you know, what to you makes the ideal American citizen?
I just think it's anyone that sees the country as greater than themselves. I think anyone that sees their community as more important than the individual. What makes a good citizen is someone who sees themselves as a part of the team. You don't have to do it with a rifle and a grenade. You could do it with an extra 2 hours at a library or at a church or wherever you worship. But it's really about seeing yourself as not the one who needs to eat first. It's the feed your buddy, feed your family, feed your friends, and then you eat. And that's what we do in the military. That's how we, NCOs eat last.
David Bellavia, pending Medal of Honor winner, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Actually, Dave Debo.